20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, Packers fans, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast, and welcome to the month of August. This year is flying by. It is your Saturday crew for the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am Jason Perrone, along with Mark Eckel and Paul Brettel. Mark, how are we doing?
Yes, we're okay. I would think, you know, in a normal year, August 1st would mean, hey, Hall of Fame game's coming up. Preseason games are right here, but not in 2020.
No. No, totally different times. And since I know we always do the weather update, there is actually a significant thing happening here in Arizona, which is not that the sun is out, because that's obvious, but 117 as we sit right now. That is, thankfully, that's Fahrenheit. I think in Celsius that would make it about 200 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know. Anyway, Paul Brettel over on the great Dairyland state of Wisconsin. How are we doing over there?
Doing great. Brewers are back, still playing. That's good news. And the Bucks are back as well. However, I will say it's just a little disappointing, or quite disappointing, that not at training camp practices. And there's just not that same buzz that's usually going on in Green Bay as there normally is. But good news, season is still on track. So let's hope we get to that point.
Yeah, now, for those of you out there that obviously are not privy to the conversations that I have almost on the daily with Paul started getting a little frustrated with his baseball team, the Brewers, until I reminded him that I am an Arizona Diamondbacks supporter. And I haven't heard anything from you since then, Paul. So I think you've reset your baseline, and I think it's the Brewers, man. They're going to be fine. They'll be okay.
Yes, sir. And they won since we last talked, too. So there we go.
There you go. I probably can't say the same for the Diamondbacks, although I don't know. I'm not really paying that close of attention. So, because it's football. It's football season, and even though there are a ton of moving parts and a lot of changing things that are going on, it is Packers training camp. Packers training camp has kicked off. It has started. I know it's been covered on this show already, but just a quick around the horn, because it's going to relate to our topic today, which is both Mark and Paul wrote articles that detailed their 53 roster predictions for this season. So we're going to review those and talk about some of the similarities and differences. But one of the areas that was disrupted was the wide receiver position when it was announced that Devin Funchess was opting out of the 2020 season. He is so far the only Green Bay Packer. We are recording this on Thursday evening, so that may have changed by the time you're listening to this. That has opted out so far. So, Mark, I'll start with you. The news on Funchess, I know that it's not unexpected that a player might have opted out, but the fact that it's Funchess, and your thoughts on the wide receiver group.
Well, it's not – I mean, Paul and I both agreed on this for the last couple – since the draft, that we weren't as concerned about wide receiver as a lot of people. I'm a little bit more now. I mean – Funchess was the veteran that I thought they needed in that group. I mean, other than Adams, of course, but he was a guy that, you know, he's proven himself in the league. He's had some decent years in Carolina. I thought he'd be a great red zone target, and you know, and that's an area that the Packers have had their problems with. You know, kicking too many field goals instead of getting touchdowns when they get down in inside the 20. I thought he would, you know, if nothing else, catch some touchdown passes, some short touchdown passes. I'm not going to fault any player on any team that decides that he just doesn't think it's worth the risk. You know, he's putting his family, his children first. You know, good for him. You know, and he gave the team plenty of notice, which I think is important. But if you're asking me, I thought people, you know, I think every team's going to have at least one of five players opt out. Funchess wasn't a guy I would have picked on the Packers. It must really mean a lot to him, because here's a guy that came in on a 1-year prove it deal. So, like, he's giving up a lot in terms of, you know, his future. the money. I mean, you know, anybody would is giving up a nice contract, but I mean, if he had a decent year this year, he stood to be a free agent next year and, you know, sign a nice long-term deal either with the Packers or with another team. So, give him credit there that he's putting family ahead of his own, you know, his own football career.
Yeah. And I talked about it on the Quick Slants podcast that went up today, or I should say earlier this week, went up on Thursday, about that and that it is a personal decision. But the thing about Funchess that stands out is that he's still pretty young. I mean, he's pretty young to be a guy that's on a prove-it deal already, and for one that did some of the good things that he did in Carolina, but I think a lot of that had to do with him missing a lot of last season and the Packers maybe just not knowing exactly how well he might bounce back after not playing football for a year. Paul, as far as, and we'll break it down more when we get to the roster differences and your guys' roster predictions, but just some quick thoughts on Funchess and when the news first hit and your initial reaction.
Yeah, so after, you know, shortly after that night I wrote an article for the next day, and my thought on the receiver position is without Funchess, it doesn't change my expectations for this team. You know, I still think they're a Super Bowl caliber team with Funchess, without Funchess, but it adds pressure to, you know, MVS, EQ, Jake Kumerow, Begelton, if they're on the roster, it adds pressure to them to step up and produce this year because, you know, like Mark, I saw Funchess as the veteran, kind of that safety blanket, that stability, that bringing that stability to a unit that has question marks. You know, I'm confident that I think, you know, I haven't said it here before, I think MVS bounce back. I think EQ has a nice season as well, but there's also scenarios where neither of those happen. You know, everyone expects Lazard to take a step forward, but we still need to see that. And so I think that Funchess provided a security blanket if one of those guys, you know, doesn't perform as we hope. So there's just added pressure on those guys to produce. But like I said, it doesn't change my expectations for this team.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you there. You hit the nail on the head as far as, man, the Packers obviously were betting on who they had in the wide receiver room by not adding a bunch else outside of Funchess. If I can't even imagine if both MVS and EQ don't pan out this season, how bad that's going to be for the Green Bay Packers. So, I mean, I'm pulling for all these players to do well because they're Green Bay Packers, but specifically those two guys because they've shown they can do it. It would be a huge disappointment if they didn't. So we'll hit the wide receiver position at some point, but I want to start out with, I'm actually going to kind of go in a little bit of reverse order here because I want to start off with the easiest and most obvious group, which is the specialists. And you guys both agreed on your roster predictions. Mason Crosby as the kicker, J.K. Scott as the punter, Hunter Bradley as the long snapper. No surprise there. I don't really know what else there is to say other than obviously Mason Crosby is important because he's been a steady kicker for a long time. But Mark, anything to add on those three?
No, I mean, Scott has to be more. I think he's a very good punter. He just needs consistency there are some punts you see him. I mean, he just booms the heck out of them. You know, great, great hang time, great, great distance. He puts them inside the 20, but then, and it seems like at the worst time, sometimes he'll just, you know, shank a 28-yarder or something. And, you know, and that's, I think that comes with experience and learning the game a little more. You know, he's fine. And Hunter Bradley, I mean, you know, you only know a long snapper when there's a bad snap. And there hasn't been one yet from him, so all's well there.
Yeah, I would say that. And with regards to J.K. Scott, it's you want the Packers to have a plan. I mean, I remember a couple seasons ago when they decided to cut Tim Mastay and they brought Jacob Shum in like the day before their last preseason game, right? It might have even been after their last preseason game, and then he starts the season as the punter. That was in 2016, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And you don't want to be in that kind of situation, but the Packers aren't going to do that. They drafted Scott in the fifth round just a year ago, 2 years ago. So it's not going to be anything that they're going to move on from too quickly. But Paul, anything to add about the specialists?
No, I believe I summed it up as those are the only guys at their positions entering camp. So there you go.
There you go. Exactly. All right. So we'll go in order here and we'll start with the obvious, which is the quarterback position. So you each had the same quarterback room. You've got Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, and Tim Boyle. Paul, we'll start with you on the quarterback situation. Obviously smart for the Packers to think ahead and carry at least one extra quarterback in these COVID times and with a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, that was pretty much my thinking behind it. Usually I am not a proponent of carrying three quarterbacks. I think that roster spot can be better used at a different position. But this year, we don't know what's going to happen. And say Aaron Rodgers has to miss 2 weeks. You know, I want a backup in Boyle who knows the offense rather than trying to scramble, find someone, you know, in free agency, bring them in, catch them up to speed, you know, for a 2 week period before he's back. So I just think it makes sense given the times that we're in.
Mark, I'm assuming that was probably similar to your thought process with the QBs.
Yes. Yeah. I kept all three for the same reason. If we were not going through what we're going through with, you know, with COVID-19, I thought there was a chance they might only keep two, you know, like as Paul said, you could use that roster spot, you know, for an extra lineman, for an extra linebacker, for an extra whatever you felt. But I don't, you know, without any preseason games, I don't see Jordan Love being ready to be the number two quarterback for the Green Bay Packers this year. Now, maybe I'm, you know, hey, if he is, then he's really good, and he's really better than a lot of people think. But I just don't see any rookie quarterback. He was a little bit of a project to begin with. So, yeah, I don't see him. I thought he needed, and we've talked about this here, that, you know, that's the one. I hate preseason games. I really do. I hate to cover them. I just think, you know, I watch them just hoping nobody gets hurt. But this year was the one year I kind of was looking forward to preseason just to see, you know, what Jordan Love was all about.
Oh, you and everyone else. And I think, I think you make a great point there, which is if he steps up and plays well. Now, he's obviously, you know, they trade up in the first round to draft him. He's a top prospect, and a lot of teams had him higher on their board. You expect a player like him to have a better chance of success than not, even if he doesn't play a lot, because his talent level should warrant the first round pick. But they've had such limited time to learn the offense, and you're getting used to life in the NFL, which is very different from college. All those factors, I think all of that makes a ton of sense. And so for Jordan Love to have to play this season, you know, it could be a sink or swim type of situation. And then the other thing that we don't know a lot about with regards to Love is how well would he handle coming in and laying an absolute clunker, and if he plays in a game, and can his confidence recover, and can he mentally handle that? You know, we don't know the answer to that question. So Boyle being there, obviously, I think helps take a lot of pressure off of the Packers in a quarterback that knows the offense, like you said, Paul. And then if Jordan Love, you know, has to go in there and play, you at least have the option to go in a different direction if you want to save Love for a number of reasons there. So that's the QB position. You guys were in lockstep.
And Boyle's not bad. Boyle's not a bad backup. I can live with Tim Boyle as a, you know what I'm saying?
Any guy that comes in as an undrafted free agent that makes a team. Now, obviously, the Packers are very solidified in who their quarterback is and has been for many years. So it's not like, you know, Boyle had to really compete hard against somebody for that number two spot. But he did have to win the spot. He did have to win the spot. But, you know,
he beat out a second round pick of the, I mean, not the Packers second round pick, but he beat out Kizer last year.
Well, Kizer was drafted there. I don't know if what we've seen from him necessarily warranted that. But again, that shows the risk of the NFL and of the draft, which is you just never know. You know, as high rated as much play as some of these players get, and there's going to be guys that were drafted high this season that are not going to pan out, and there's going to be some that will that weren't drafted very highly. It happens every single season. So, you know, Tim Boyle, you could definitely do a lot worse if you needed a number two or a security blanket there. So quarterback position, we agreed there. You guys agree also on the next position, which is running backs. You both had the same four: Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, Jamal Williams, and Tyler Irvin. A good point to be made about the depth of the position, because you've got a couple of young guys too that could potentially hold spots on the practice squad and be a backup there, because again, you never know what's going to happen with the health situation, and running backs tend to get dinged up a little bit. I know Aaron Jones has missed some time. We don't know how durable A.J. Dillon's going to be at the pro level. So, Mark, we'll start with you in the running back position, because you've got some good notes here about this running back group as compared to one that we remember from a while ago.
Yeah, I think this is as deep and as talented as the Packers have been at running back since they had Amon Green, Najee Davenport, and Tony Fisher, which was three, you know, and all three of them, I mean, I'm going back to that, what's that, early 2000s, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, Green was the guy. I mean, he was the guy, but You brought Davenport in as a change of pace, big bruiser, you know, pick up some tough yards. And then Fisher was a great receiver out of the backfield that could do a lot of things. Also pretty good blocker. So they had it was very versatile, talented backfield then. And I think what we're looking at now is somewhat the same. I mean, Aaron Jones being the guy, but A.J. Dillon being that big back. I think he's better than Davenport overall, maybe, but let's hope he is. And then Jamal Williams being your, do it all kind of guy, block, run, catch. So it's a deep, talented group. And then, and Irvin, who's your return guy, and he saved the return game last year for him. And he could also be like a little gadget type guy that they can bring in and have a handful of plays for a jet sweep or a bubble screen. And there's all kinds of things they could do with him.
Well, and he's not at the same level, but Mark, you covered a team that had a player that was really, really good in that type of role. And that was Darren Sproles when he was with the Eagles.
Exactly. And you're right. That's a rare comparison, especially Sproles with the Eagles. Cause by that point he was a little past his prime. And the Eagles he got hurt every year with the Eagles because I think they overused him. And that's a valuable kind of guy to have. I mean, there's a time and a place for a back like Tyler Irvin. I hope he does get a play here. Now, again, there's only one ball, and you got three good backs that I just mentioned. Plus, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to want to throw the ball to Davante Adams a few times a game. So, I don't know how many plays a game the Packers are going to have, but I could, running back's very good. I'll leave it at that.
Well, and having A.J. Dillon is going to help. You assume if he's going to take some decent snaps as a rookie, it's going to help keep some of that wear off of Aaron Jones. And it has me wondering, Paul, a little bit, if this might not help Aaron Jones in terms of his, just saving some of that mileage on him, and whether or not that makes him more attractive to the Packers when they start thinking about extending him or maybe wanting to give him some additional years onto his contract.
Yeah, I think it'll give Jones a little bit of a reprieve, but I think the addition of Dillon, what it really does is it gives him another explosive option. Not taking anything away from Jamal Williams as an all-around back. He's excellent, run blocking, running the ball, pass catching. But he doesn't have that explosive ability. A.J. Dillon does. And it just gives him that home run, potential in addition to Jones. And I also think it allows Green Bay to put Aaron Jones in a receiver role more often this year as well. With Dillon in the backfield, I think we're going to see more of Aaron Jones in the slot and out wide than we did last year as well. I think it just frees up LaFleur a little bit.
Yeah, that was successful. I mean, they had a lot of success with Jones in the passing game when they finally got it down, and they had a couple misses too. But the offense showed that the system works if you've got a dynamic back like a Jones that can take on that role as a receiver. So I'm looking forward to that continuing and only getting better in this season. So Paul, will stay with you moving into the next position, which is wide receiver. And this is where you and Mark did vary a little bit. So I will let you go through you've got five wide receivers. So I'll let you go through your guys. Obviously, Devin Funchess being one of them, because we don't know what we don't know at the time that this was done.
Yep. So I'm on the side of, I think the Packers just need five receivers this year. With the way LaFleur wants to run the offense, we're going to see a lot more tight ends and running backs. We already did last year. Last year was also a mashup of what LaFleur likes to run and what McCarthy had established over the years. It's difficult to, in one year, implement your entire offense. So as we could tell from the draft, it's going to go more in the direction of what LaFleur envisions it being. And that means more two running back, two tight end sets. The days of Aaron Rodgers lining up with four or five wide in Green Bay, they're pretty much gone. We'll see it here and there, but that's not going to be the bread and butter anymore. So with that in play, when we think about pass catchers, not receivers, we already mentioned the running backs, Tyler Irvin, Jamal Williams, A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones, tight end, Robert Tonyan, Mercedes Lewis here and there, Jay Sternberger, then DeGuara as the, H-back tight end role as well. So then we add in five more receivers, and all of a sudden we have 13 pass catchers that can see the field regularly and can all be can function in the passing game. So that's why I put the five receivers on there, and it was MVS, EQ, Lazard, Funchess, and Davante Adams, of course. Now with Funchess out, I still think that they can get by with five. However, just to amend, I will put in Jake Kumerow over Reggie Bagleton. And the two big reasons for that, one, QB1 is a fan of his, and I do think that plays a factor. But two, this offseason, Bagleton's coming from the CFL, OTAs, mini camps, all been done virtually. There's no preseason games. And Jake Kumerow is now in his third year with the Packers, second in the LaFleur offense. I think that advantage is what's going to separate him.
Yeah, and there's going to be a bunch of anomalies and things that are going to take place because of this unique situation this season that wouldn't have otherwise. And you'll see some players that may not have a career that would have, and some that would have had a career that don't. And I think you make a solid case there for Jake Kumerow. I think in a different world, you know, Kumerow might be challenged to make this roster. But, Mark, you had six wide receivers, right, and you did have Reggie Bagleton on your list. So take us through your list. And obviously, again, you've got Funchess. So who are you swapping in for Funchess, if anybody?
Well, now I'll probably, like Paul said, I would probably just keep the five. I'm not keeping Jake Kumerow. I've had enough of Jake Kumerow. I know Rodgers talks about big deal. I mean, last I looked, Rodgers wasn't general manager. So, and you know, next year Rodgers isn't going to be here. So who cares? well, didn't he say that?
did we pick the wrong topic for today?
No, I kept Bagleton only because I've been talking him up since they signed him. So I would be a little hypocritical of me to talk about this guy that they got from Canada and how productive he's been and blah, 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 and then not put him on the 53. So, I mean, Kumerow, listen, he's the oldest of the Packers wide receivers. So there's not a lot of upside for him. And he kind of is. This is what he is. He gets hurt a lot. Listen, I hope I hope they all do well. But I mean, if I had to cut one, he was the guy that I cut because I don't see the upside. Durability has been an issue. You know, last year they talked him up every week, Kumerow, and then he never played. So I don't know. There's something that's missing there.
I think that's one of the most telling things from last season that is not talked about. For how underwhelming that unit was, we still didn't see Jake Kumerow on the field, and that's very telling.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And you know, if we move into the next spot, which is tight end,
let me just add one more thing. Do either of you think, with Funchess out now, so the Packers get his money back for this year, will they sign him? Is there potentially a guy out there that they may sign and or trade for?
I would expect, and Paul, I'll let you chime in on this too. I would expect the Packers and Brian Gutekunst to do what they've done since he took over two seasons ago, which is at least consider his options.
Yeah, I think if I had to guess, I think they stay where they are. They stand pat. You know, one guy that I've kind of liked throughout this offseason, and he's not going to cost very much, is Taylor Gabriel. I like that he brings a little bit different body and skill set. You know, Packers have a lot of big bodied receivers. You know, he's that smaller, more traditional slot receiver, which I don't think is necessary for the LaFleur offense to be successful, but I like the change of pace, and he's a reliable pass catcher. I know last year he was injured, had a few drops as well, but over his career, or the 3 years before that, he averaged almost 70% catch rate. And so that's kind of that Funchess role. I know, obviously, different skill sets, but that veteran who can provide some stability. So I wouldn't mind that addition, but like I said, I think they stay where they are.
Yeah, because Funchess was a veteran body, and maybe they really want a veteran body in there, even though MVS and EQ would hypothetically be going into their third years and they qualify as veterans. You know, they might be looking for little bit more experience and proven production on the field. So that's an interesting position to keep an eye on. And then if we look at some more pass catchers, this is probably a quick conversation. The tight end group, you each have the same four: Jay Sternberger, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara, and Robert Tonyan. Now DeGuara is going to play some H-back, so he's not going to be your true tight end, but I think that helps the Packers stay dynamic, because if you just had four straight up tight ends, well, how are you going to get them all in the field and get them the snaps that you want to? I mean, Mercedes Lewis at this point is a, you know, he's basically an additional offensive lineman. He's not a dynamic pass catcher at all, although he can probably haul one or two in if they're on the goal line. Jay Sternberger, we've talked about before with the expectations of him having a big season. He was one of my breakout players. DeGuara is a rookie, unproven, we're not sure. And Tanyan, we know what we're getting in him is as a good special teams contributor, and then he shows up every once in a while on the highlight film. So, Mark, anything to add about the tight ends and that those four? I mean, obviously, this was a pretty cut and dry group of four.
Yeah, and like I wrote in the story, I mean, DeGuara is, I don't consider him a tight end. I was really tempted to put him as a H-back fullback because I think he'll line up there is just as often. But as I said, or as I wrote, if he's going to wear 81, I guess I got to call him a tight end, right? So, but he's, I mean, he's, like you said, he's not your classic tight end in any sense of the imagination. He's going to be everywhere. He's going to be, I kind of think they want to use him the way the 49ers use the guy whose name I can't pronounce.
Juszczyk.
Yeah, him.
Jinx.
Yeah, that guy. So, I mean, but yeah, tight end's pretty cut and dry. I mean, I don't see Looney upsetting the cart there and knocking off Tanya. I mean, he'll try, but I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it's a great story. And you make a good point about DeGuara and the number that he's wearing. I know Andy Benoit somewhere is smiling if he's listening to this show, because it's important that the number on the back of the jersey line up with the position that the player is playing on the field. And we all, as Packers fans, know what I'm talking about right there. And DeGuara might want to be careful. You know, it was announced on Thursday that the Packers claimed H-back John Lovett off of waivers from the Kansas City Chiefs. So the rookie might have some competition there. I say that tongue-in-cheek, as Lovett never even got on the field last year because he was on injured reserve with the Chiefs with a shoulder injury. So he has yet to take a snap in the NFL. But, Paul, tight end position, again, like Mark said, pretty cut and dry, and you had the same four guys. Anything to add?
No, like running back, that's, you know, those are kind of no-brainers for me. Those four are making it.
Yeah. So moving into the offensive line, this is a healthier discussion. You guys had a little bit of variation here. So, Mark, you had nine, if I'm not mistaken. You have nine guys. Sure. Paul, you had then 10 because you had one extra guy, unless my math is off there.
Nope, that's correct.
So, Mark, we'll start with you as far as your offensive line. I mean, this is one where there's a lot of choices to make, and there's going to be some names that we're familiar with that aren't going to make the cut.
Right. I kept the starting five or starting six, I'll say, in that Bakhtiari, Jenkins, Lindsley, Turner, Taylor, because whoever wins that job, and my good friend Ricky Wagner. Who I still hope is a backup, but for now he's your starting right tackle. So I kept those six. I kept Lucas Patrick because obviously they're going to keep him. They extended him last year. They like him. I kept John Runyon Jr. I don't think he'll dress for a lot of games this year, but he'll be on the team. And I kept the backup center Hanson, who I think they like as well. I think the other kid, Stepniak, will be on PUP. I think, you know, he's coming off the injury. No reason to force him in there. And then I got rid of all the borderline tackles, the Alex Light, John LeGlue. I think in a perfect world, a lot of these young offensive linemen end up on the practice squad. And could body, you know, over the course of the season, hopefully if there is a long season, you know, they could be up and down, depending on injuries and whatever else happens this crazy season. But I just thought nine was enough. I know, you know, Paul had the extra lineman because he went short at wide receiver. So who was the 10th one that you kept?
Paul? Yosh Nijman.
Yeah. Yep. And that wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me at all. Although I think he could probably use another year on a practice squad.
Well, and I was going to say, Mark, you've got nine on your offensive line, but you've got in some of your notes, you've got a guy that you wouldn't mind adding as a tenth there as a little bit of insurance.
Well, yeah, and I think Paul agrees with me here. I want my man back, Jared Valdez. Mm-hmm. But again, if I bring him back, I don't know if I'm keeping 10. I may cut one of the guys that are there now.
Yeah, which is always possible. I mean, you've got a lot of bodies there. So, Paul, you did have Yosh Nijman making the roster, along with the same other guys that Mark had. So, pretty much in similar thought there. But as far as the breakdown or the reasoning, any major differences?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm with Mark, and we've talked about it quite a bit on here, the concerns that we have at the tackle position and really just the lack of depth. I mean, Wagner, there's a chance he gets hurt this year. He's been hurt, I think, most years he's been in the NFL. Or if he struggles, there's not any really good options behind him. And I'm not saying that Yosh is going to step in and be that great option, but I wanted a true tackle, and I understand that this is a bit of a swing for the fences, and he's going to have had to have taken a big step forward between last year and this year. And with what Mark said, another year of on the practice squad will probably do him good. But it was a little bit of a swing for the fences. We know what Alex Light can offer. And I think from a ceiling potential standpoint, he has much more than, you know, the John LeGlues and the Cody Conways. So I wanted another true tackle just to have as an option for depth, and took a little swing for the fences.
Well, Alex Light didn't prove to be much last season. So, I mean, it's you know, that might have actually been a more quality at bat than you think, Paul. I mean, it could have been your guy trying to inside out one into right field for a base hit, you know?
depends what Yosh looks like this summer. I mean, a month from now.
He looks the part. I mean, he has great – he has – all the tools are there. I mean, he has great size. I think he's the biggest guy on the team, right?
Yeah.
And he's pretty athletic. I mean, I remember coming out of Virginia Tech, like his athletic numbers at the combine and stuff were pretty off the charts. So there's a lot of ability there. You know, you could be right there. I mean, he's another guy that could have probably used a real training camp, some mini camps, and, you know, three or four preseason games to get that talent out, you know, to look good. Now he'll have some practices and stuff, but again, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, it's well, and again, Alex Light, you swap him in or out for one of these other guys, I don't think you can really do.
I turned off the light.
Yeah, much worse. You can't do much worse. You can it could get better. So, you know, I don't hate the logic at all. And again, with offensive linemen, you know, you never know what the availability situation is going to be this year. So there's a lot to figure out there too. But that'll wrap up the offense. We move on to the defensive side of the ball. So we start on the defensive line. You had the same five: Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, Kingsley Keke, Tyler Lancaster, and Trayvon Hester. Kenny Clark coming fresh off of a snub from the NFL's top 100 list, Mark.
Again, I'm one of them because I'm old. I don't care about those lists. That's impossible. That's just impossible. There are not 100 players in the NFL better than Kenny Clark.
And it's voted on by the players.
Yeah, but I've seen those players vote. No, I have. I mean, they give it to them like a week or two to go in the season. Like a PR guy goes around and hands it to them, and they're like, especially if you're a team like fighting for the point, the last thing you feel like doing is filling this ballot out, you know? So they just, you know, somebody, they just, it's not taken as serious as the players who vote don't take it as serious as the fans who get upset. Let's leave it at that.
That seems fair.
They just don't. And I mean, listen, I don't, you know, I'm a Packer fan. Okay. Right. But I'm also kind of objective, I think, from all my years of covering. Kenny Clark, I think, is the second, third best player on the Packers. I mean, I know Zadarius Smith had a great year and all that, but if I could only keep one of them, I might keep Kenny Clark. I mean, there's a noticeable difference in that Packer defense when he's healthy and playing well as to when he's a little nick. I mean, he makes other guys – Dean Lowry plays much better when Kenny Clark is – at his best. I don't know. Leaving him off the top 100 was insane. I thought it was just total insanity.
Well, it was disappointing. But to your point, Mark, I mean, if you're making a choice between, which hopefully the Packers don't have to do, but if you're making a choice between Kenny Clark and any other major free agent on this team, just remember, Kenny Clark is about to get paid and go into his second contract. He's only 24 years old. So if you've got a stud that's 24, I don't know if it gets any easier of a decision than that, right?
I love the guy. I just think he's one of the few last very good picks that Ted Thompson made. And, I, you know, that was a real good pick getting him, you know, late first round like he did. You know what it is, too? Players like, you know, he doesn't get a ton of sacks. Because that's not what he does. He's a, you know, but he takes on two and three block. He just does so much. If you watch him, if you watch film, I mean, I just think, I mean, maybe I'm overrating him. I don't know. But I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was coming down to, like, I was, like, well, I didn't watch it at all. But I was watching it on Twitter, I guess. People say no. I guess word got out the Packers had six players. And everybody was trying to guess who the six were. And I would say, well, Clark's definitely one of them. You know, I just had him as – I was – at the end, I was thinking, maybe they didn't put Rodgers on it. I mean, that really entered my mind because I couldn't even fathom Kenny Clark not being one of the top 100 players in the NFL. I think he's one of the top 50. I might actually do this now that you got me going on this. I might actually just do my top – I think I might have him in the top 50. I really might.
Right. Well, so as far as the defensive line, Paul, I know you're a big Kenny Clark fan as well. I'm sure that the snub from the list stood out to you, whether you care about it or not. I don't exactly know. But you and Mark kind of shared the same sentiment as far as who should be up front on the Packers defense this season.
Yeah, we were both out on Montrevious Adams. You know, my thinking was...
Did I talk you into that one? Do I get any credit for that?
I've been on the fence, but yes, you may have pushed me over the top on that. But, you know, he's entering year four now. You know, we haven't seen, you know, he was injured early, and then we haven't seen much in terms of production from him since. And I like, you know, I think Trayvon Hester, he's another rotational guy. He's not going to come in and dominate, but he's appeared in 41 games over his career, and he can provide some help against the run, which is what this team needs. One thing I will... He wasn't on my roster, but in my story or article, I did mention that, and it would have looked poorly now since he's been cut, but I did mention that I was considering Gerald Willis over Tyler Lancaster. Reason being, Willis, very productive at Miami. I think he's just got more potential than Lancaster. Lancaster, he's been solid in small doses, but I think we just know what he is. Willis, I think there's untapped potential there. So I did mention that I wrestled with that one a bit, but ultimately I did go with Lancaster.
Well, I wrote that story, I believe, on a Saturday. It appeared Monday. And when I wrote it, it was before Willis got cut. So I had to actually go in and edit it. I didn't have Willis on the team, but I had him saying, like, well, at least he should at least be on the practice squad. He could give him this, that, other thing. There must be issues there that we don't know about, because the kid that I saw at the University of Miami is too good to be the 90th player, like a guy, the first player cut. He's just too good. And the Packers aren't the first team to cut him. The Ravens cut him, the Dolphins cut him. So there's something missing that we don't know. That there's something, whether it's off the field stuff, because he did have some baggage both in Florida and so there must be something there that we're not aware of, that the Packers just said, you know what, it's not worth dealing with this.
Yeah,
he's too talented that I get a look at a position where the Packers aren't very deep, you know.
Well, in this season, it's one of those where this year more than any, I mean, in any season it's tough to speculate and know what the heck is going on. This year there's a ton of other things that it could be on top of all of that too. So the bottom line is Gerald Willis is not a Green Bay Packer right now, at least not at this point. If he's brought back, who knows? But so defensive line wise, you guys were both in lockstep there as well with the five that you had.
So you didn't add Everson Griffin, Paul?
No, I didn't.
I'll just say, as far as that goes, and I didn't address the top 100 thing. I talked about it on Quick Slants as well. I'm not a fan of the top 100. I think the voting system, Mark, you kind of alluded to it. The voting system is, and they're different, obviously, for the Pro Bowl and for the top 100 list, but it's broken. Like that's why people don't like the Pro Bowl, because the way that players are selected is just, it's like, come on, man. You know, last season, David Bakhtiari, you know, I mean, it's always a year late that a player ends up on the Pro Bowl, or, you know, watch next year, Kenny Clark may have, you know, a little bit of a season down from what he did last season, but then he's going to end up in the top 50 on that top 100 list, just because there's a year lag of everybody being like, oh, we got to get Kenny on this list. He wasn't on it last year. So, yeah.
Can I tell you a Pro Bowl story?
Would love it.
Absolutely.
All right. So this is 1988. All right. I don't know. You guys were Were either of you born yet?
Absolutely.
I was not.
Good. I didn't think so. I knew one of you was born. All right. So 1988. The Eagles are spending a week in Arizona. Jason, you can relate to that. We're staying at the it's a great resort out there. I can
Biltmore?
Not Camelback. No.
Camelback Inn, Biltmore, Phoenician.
The point.
Okay. Was it the Point Tapatio or the Point South Mountain?
South Mountain.
Okay.
All right. So we're staying there for a whole week because the Eagles, when Buddy Ryan was the coach, when they had two like long road trips back to back, he would keep them out there for a week. So it's the last two games of the season. They played the Cardinals and then the Cowboys. So they play the Cardinals, they beat the Cardinals, and we spend the week in Arizona before we go to Dallas. Not the worst thing in the world for the beat writers who right. it's getting pretty cold back in Philadelphia that time of year. So we have a great time. Anyway, the players had voted for the Pro Bowl before they left for Arizona. That was when the votes were due. The team gets announced the week that we're out in Arizona. So the PR guy sees me. We're staying in the same villa or whatever, same complex area. He says to me, "Hey, you going out to practice?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, here's the Pro Bowl list. Give it, pass it around." I remember, it's 88. This is no internet. There's no, it's a long time ago. So he hands me the list of the whole Pro Bowl team. And he says to me, "Yeah, Randall made it, Reggie made it, and this guy made that guy. But here's the whole list." So I have it, and I'm walking with it. And as I'm walking to practice, Mike Quick and Reggie White are walking. And two guys that I got along with very, very well. So I know Reggie made it, right? So I don't think Quick did that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he didn't because he was hurt. So I congratulate Reggie on making the Pro Bowl. And I said, "Yeah, I got you got the list?" I said, "Yeah." So I hand Reggie the list. And first thing, he looks at it and says, "Oh, no." And I'm like, "What's wrong?" He went, "Oh, no." I said, what, who didn't?" And he looks at Quick, and they start laughing a little bit, but they're upset. And I'm like, "Guys, you got to tell me what's going on." And they said, "Well, don't write this." But I guess I can tell it now, 30 years later, whatever. But they said, they wanted Randall to make the Pro Bowl and start. And that was like his first great year. So you can't vote for your own guy. So they voted for Wade Wilson of the Vikings as the quarterback over Jim Everett. So that Randall, because Everett was the guy they thought might beat out Randall. So they didn't vote for Everett. They voted for Wade Wilson. Well, Wade Wilson made the game over Everett. It was Randall and Wade Wilson were the two, quarterbacks. So they felt like they actually felt bad that they put Wilson in the game over Everett. But that just tells you how, and I'm sure the Eagles aren't alone in their thinking the way they voted that year. So from then on, I just had in my mind, I'm like, yeah, Pro Bowl voting means nothing.
And that was just so I'm straight here. Was that when Wilson was quarterback of the Vikings?
Yes. He had a good year.
I guess they got to get a player in the Pro Bowl, a quarterback in the Pro Bowl once every couple decades, right? So one that they didn't borrow from the Green Bay Packers, that is.
Right.
Yeah. So, no, that's awesome. Always love those love those little nuggets in there. So, all right, off the defensive line into the edge rushers. So this was a little bit – you guys varied a little bit here. So, Mark, you had 5, and Paul, you had just 4. The 4 guys. So, Paul, we'll let you start with your list of 4 on the edge. We all know who at least 3 of those names are.
Yep. So, obviously, the Smiths and Gary, and admittedly – this came out last Wednesday, and Wednesday afternoon into Thursday, I was already kicking myself. I kind of wanted to keep a 5th edge rusher, but I kept 4, and the 4th was Jonathan Garvin, 7th round pick. Reason that I chose him, another productive player in college, and once again, upside. He's either just turned 21 years old or he's not even 21 years old yet. So productive player, getting after the quarterback and against the run, and like I said, just a lot of potential that he has.
Yeah, and then, Mark, you've got one other guy. You've got a 5th guy on your edge list.
Yeah, I kept the same 4 that Paul did, same for the same reasons on Garvin upside. He was pretty good, again, pretty good college player that I don't think they want to risk. They probably could put him on a practice squad, but I don't know if they'd want to risk exposing him to the rest of the league. So I kept him. And then I also kept Tim Williams, who was on the practice squad last year, a veteran. I think this year, I don't know if I read it somewhere or saw the quote somewhere the team might keep a little more veteran some places because of everything that's going on. So I just felt I would keep five edge guys. And Williams was my fifth guy based mostly only because of he has been in the league. He played in Baltimore a little bit. There's other guys. I mean, I went back and forth there too. Should I keep five edge and four inside guys or go forward, you know, go back and forth there? Do I keep Williams and Garvin or just one of them? That was a tough decision and probably one the Packers are going to be doing the same things over. So we'll find out of what they think. But Williams I just kept mainly for the experience factor there.
Well, it's an easy discussion, but there are two guys that did make the NFL's top 100 list on your Packers edge depth chart, which is Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, both of their first season with the team as free agents. So, you know, it's a very impactful group. It's one I expect to be good again this year. And Rashawn Gary, a huge X factor there. If he steps up and does some really big things, then that gives the Packers a lot of flexibility in what they can do in moving forward with the group and in other areas of the roster. But Mark, you said you weren't sure whether to allocate more to the edge or the inside. And the answer for you was four inside linebackers then. So give us your four.
I kept Christian Kirksey, obviously. He's number one. I kept the rookie Martin out of Minnesota. I kept Oren Burks, giving him one more chance. And I kept Ty Summers. Bolton was the one. I cut him. You know, I said, you know, he's coming off the injury. And I think that was my deciding factor there. That, again, because this year is such a goofy year, I don't think anybody's going to pick him up if they cut him and put him on the practice, try to get him on the practice squad because he's coming off the bad knee injury. So, but again, if, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he made the team as the fifth guy or if he beat out one of the other guys. Burks I kept only because I think he's pretty good on special. I did not pretty good. I think he's very good on special teams. He has not been the guy they had hoped he would be when they traded up in the third round to take him out of Vanderbilt. And again, maybe the light bulb finally comes on. I mean, just a guy from a couple years ago, Fackrell, his first two years, he looked like a total washout. And then all of a sudden, the third year, the light bulb came on and he had what he had, like 10 sacks that year, 10 and a half sacks. So maybe Burks is the same way. Maybe it takes a little time. He has had some injuries. But I'm not ready to give up on him yet. So that's kind of why I kept him. Martin, I think, was a real good pick. I actually did a story about him that ran in Thursday's Packer report. He could be a fifth round steal for the Packers, I think.
No, I agree. I think a lot feel that same way. And Paul, you saw the inside linebacker position exactly the same as Mark did. So are you as high on Kamal Martin as Marcus?
Yeah, I really like what he can bring as well. I mean, at Minnesota, he primarily played in the box, but they lined him up pretty much everywhere. He can play against the run, but he can also drop into coverage a little bit as well, help against those tight ends and running backs. And then as far as Oren Burks, I agree with Mark. Still a year too early to give up on him. Kirksey's a no-brainer. And then I went with Ty Summers over Bolton just because – pretty much what Mark said, the uncertainty of how he's going to come back from that injury. I know he looked really good last preseason, but odd off season coming back from the injury. And initially I wrestled around with keeping five of these guys. So keeping Bolton with the additional four, but for how often the Packers play with just one linebacker on the field, keeping five of them, even if there are question marks around this unit, it just felt unnecessary.
Yeah. Bolton was coming on. He was really coming on and making some waves, and then injury, you know, we've seen it happen so many times. Injury kind of derails everything, and would like to see him make something of himself. I know some of his tweets, if you follow him, he's definitely motivated and ready to come back. He's aware of what he's up against, but he's got no shortage of confidence in himself. So you want that healthy competition. And in a group and moving on to the next group that is a little bit meatier and has more players to it. Impressively enough, you guys both agreed on your cornerbacks room, and there were six cornerbacks that you guys each kept. So, Paul, we've talked a lot about the corner group on recent shows. We broke down, I mean, almost each one of these guys individually, just because it's such an important position. And then the will or will not the Packers bring Tremont Williams back. Well, right now he's not on this roster. So give us who your six guys are.
So Jair, Kevin King, Chandon Sullivan, Josh Jackson, once again, like Burks, struggled, but still too early to give up on him. Kadar Holman, you know, this podcast's biggest fan.
We're the president of his fan club. That's right.
Yes, we are. And then the sixth guy, Stanford Samuels, undrafted free agent from Florida State. There's several draft analyst scouts who had a third, fourth round grade on him prior to the combine where he ran, I believe, a 4.65 40. But he's a physical corner. And I think in the press man coverage that Petten likes to use, I think he could find success there. Now, he's never going to, you know, with that speed, he's not going to come in and be, you know, the one or two cornerback on your team. But if he's your four, you're doing pretty well, I think. I think he can find success in the NFL if put into the right situation. And so that's why I decided to keep him, just because I think he's a really good fit for this defense.
And, Mark, you had the exact same group. So any varying thoughts on your group of guys?
No, Paul, I agree with Paul. It's funny that we both put the kid from Florida State on there, Samuel, and that my thinking was the same as Paul's. I think I think they got a pretty good deal there getting him as an undrafted guy. He could have easily have gone, if not third or fourth round, at least sixth round somewhere. He should have gotten drafted. But they signed him. And the Packers keep, and I know this, like, again, this year is unlike any other, but I can't remember the last time the Packers didn't keep an undrafted free agent. They almost always do. And I think he's the cream of that crop this year. So that's the one I decided to keep.
And one other thing that I wanted to add, like I said, Samuels ran like a 4.65 40. 40 is an indicator, but it's not the be all end all. And I know Chandon Sullivan still has a little bit more to prove, but last year he was very good. Sullivan ran in the 4.6s as well. So it's not necessarily, like I said, it's not the be all end all or a career killer for him by any means.
Yeah. And if you know where to be on the field, that makes up for any lack of speed because you're in the right spot. If you can run fast and you're running as fast as you can to the wrong place on the field, it doesn't really matter as much. So that's a very astute point. So
and like you said earlier, Paul, you know, I don't want my number one corner being a guy that runs a 4.6.
Right.
If he's your fourth, even in our case, he's your fifth or sixth right now. Yep. Yeah, you could be fine with that, you know. And there's upside. I remember the upside with him.
Right. So to round everything off, the final group is the safeties, and you guys did vary a little bit here. So, Mark, you have four safeties, and then Paul, because you only had four edge rushers, you've got a fifth safety. So, Paul, we'll start with you on your safety group and who your five guys are.
So, easy three, Amos, Savage, and Green, of course. And then I kept Will Redmond. You know, when he had to fill in last year, he struggled, especially in coverage, but he was very good on special teams. And I think that alone is enough to keep him on the roster. But like I said, he had some issues as the safety. And Vernon Scott, who was one of the Packers' seventh round picks, he can fill that Raven Green role. Now, I'm not saying he's going to come in and be as good as Raven Green right away. He probably isn't. But it at least gives them a backup who can fill that role if Green is out. Whereas I don't feel as confident that Redmond can. So that's why I wanted to keep a fifth safety on there. And once again, the Packers play with three quite often as well.
Right. And then, Mark, you had just the four safeties, the same four as Paul, minus Vernon Scott, who, you know, obviously I think the Packers, if they don't keep him on the roster, you would think that maybe he ends up at least on the practice squad.
Oh, and I wrote that. And that was I went back and forth between him and Redmond. And, you know, I didn't have, but by the time I got to say, I didn't have room for a fifth one. I mean, I guess I could have gone light somewhere else, but I didn't. I was going to keep, and again, in a different year, I may have kept Scott over Redmond. But again, with the lack of everything, the lack, no OTA, no mini camp, no rookie camp, no I mean, this isn't even training camp what they're doing now. They're there, but it's not what you would consider, you know, two-a-day practices, you know, doing what they've done, you know, for 100 years in football. No preseason games. I think it's going to be hard. I kept Redmond over Scott because of the experience factor. And as Paul said, he's very good on special teams. I think Scott's a guy that they can get to the pro. I don't think he'll get claimed. I mean, you don't know, but he's a guy that I think could be on the roster by the end of the year. But on my original 53, although now that, you know what, now that I'm down a wide receiver, maybe that's where I'll end the other player.
So, yeah, so Redmond survives there, or Scott survives there. So, yeah, there's your final rosters from each of these guys. And, I mean, this is always
– it's amazing that we were that close.
Yes.
We did not speak at all. I mean, we didn't – I didn't call you. You didn't call me. I didn't see your story. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and those are gutsy pieces. I mean, I give you guys both a lot of credit for putting it out there, because if there's some pieces every year that you do that – you know, are going to get a ton of fan reaction, and not all of it is positive and supportive. So, you know, and things change, and as they will, and they already have. So, but this was still fun to kind of go through, and then comparing it to how you do at the end of the season, and then, you know, how you do. I mean, Mark, in all the years that you did this covering the NFL, did you ever, by the time you wrote the piece, did you ever get it 100% correct?
No, never 100%.
See, it's hard.
Well, no. I always joked that I got it 100%. The Eagles screwed
up. There you go. That's one way to look at it. I mean, one Super Bowl ever would probably say that, Mark, maybe there's a little bit of credence to what you said there.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I know. I didn't get it wrong. They did.
Yeah, your friend Andy Reid and whatever influence he had on the draft decisions, right? As far as content this week, it's been a busy week. I've put up a couple breaking news posts. If you want to learn a little bit more about new Packers H-back John Lovett, I have a little bit up there at Game On Wisconsin. Paul, this week at Game On Wisconsin and Dairyland Express, between the two, I expect to see about 250 pieces come out from you. So what are we working on this week?
Wow. All right. That's actually lower than normal. this week, once again, I've just been kind of going through player by player, and also just looking at, you know, different, you know, thoughts that I have on training camp. Like this week at GSET TV, I did why, you know, I think they should keep five receivers. So just little nuggets like that, and if any news breaks as well.
Gotcha. And then Mark over at Packer Report.
I don't know yet. Matter of fact, I'm going to throw it out to our listeners. If anybody give me an idea this week, because I thought by now I would have like training camp stuff to write about, but they're not really doing it. It's not like there's nothing football-wise, there's nothing coming out of that. So I'll come up with something right now. I'll be honest, it's Thursday night. I don't know what I'm writing yet for Monday or next week, but I will have something. I promise you that. If any of our listeners have ideas, you have my Twitter, MarkEckles08. Give me ideas. I'll be happy to look at them at least.
Well,
so,
no.
I got to ask Paul something though. Are the Bucks going to win this or what?
I think so. I'm going to be surprised if they don't, and disappointed.
Yeah,
well, they win the East, right?
Yeah, they have. They have to. They're the best team. They were the best team in basketball before all this shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big. Obviously, we don't know how anyone's going to come back, but I mean, they have very good chemistry and the MVP. So, I mean, you got to like their chances, don't you?
Well, and I hope that they win, if for no other reason than if the Brewers go through a slump or something like that, we keep Paul out of the mental doldrums, you know?
Right, exactly. Honestly, just the fact that sports are back. I mean, the Brewers lost their opener, but they could have lost 50-0. I wouldn't care.
Yeah, it's been good. It's good to have sports back, and hopefully everybody stays healthy. We're into August now, so it's hot. I'm sure it's hot wherever you are listening out there. Thanks, everybody, as always, for listening to us. You can follow Pack-A-Day Podcast on Twitter, and then find our podcast wherever you get your podcast. So everybody stay cool, stay safe, and go Pack Go.